Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
So for me, it's kind of answering the little girl who, you know, wanted to play around with makeup, but not really transform. I wanted to see my skin. I wanted to be able to celebrate my dark skin and not really cover it up or try to be lighter. And that kind of effortless, like on the go makeup style wasn't there and still really doesn't exist.
Welcome to Breaking Beauty, the podcast all about the breakthrough people, products, and moments in beauty. We're your hosts, Jill Dunn and Carlene Higgins.
Hey, hey, Beauty Pod fam. Hey, Carlene.
Hello, Jill, and welcome back to our show, friends. So today we have a founder episode for all of you. And if you've been with us from the beginning, you know that we started our show doing only founder episodes more than 4 years ago. We really aim to profile the iconic products in beauty, helping listeners edit their top shelf.
And you know what, Carlene? Like, the reality is that there's this whole new guard that's bringing a really unique, fresh point of view to beauty. And today's guest is definitely leading the charge. Today, we welcome Jada Njai. She is the Harlem-raised, first-generation Senegalese-American founder of Ami Kole, a brand new eco-conscious beauty range designed to celebrate melanin-rich skin.
The line launched literally this past week with a trio of skin-enhancing products in beautiful Hermes-like orange packaging. There's a skin tint, a highlighting balm, and a lip oil that were 3 years in the making. And everything's vegan, cruelty-free, fragrance and alcohol-free. It's in recyclable packaging. And really, it's another big step forward in diversifying the quote-unquote clean beauty aisle. Online, anyway.
Absolutely. And everything that Jada does, what I think is most special about this range is just, it just feels so personal to her. Mm-hmm. And I love those stories. And so perhaps that's why Ami Kole has already attracted some pretty bold-faced investors. So there's Henry Davis. He's the former Glossier president. There's Hannah Bronfman. There's also Who What Wears Catherine Power and the venture capital firm Imaginary Ventures. And that was co-founded by Natalie Massenet. And she was the woman who revolutionized retail forever with Net-a-Porter.
Yeah. So there's indie brands on a shoestring, and then there's like indie brands on a velvet rope, you know?
Yeah.
I think that you guys are going to love our chat today. Jada is the real deal. She's got mad beauty cred, having worked over at L'Oreal and at Glossier for 8 years before venturing out on her own. So she's going to tell us all about that career journey, why her melanin-centric beauty line is so needed and refreshing right now, and how the past year of activism and reflection has impacted both startup life and herself personally.
And here she is. Welcome, Jada. Jumping in to let you know about our show partner, Skillshare. So I just had my birthday, and you know us Geminis, we get bored so easily. If I'm not learning and absorbing new info, yawn. So that's why I'm pumped to be partnering with Skillshare. It's an online learning community that offers membership with meaning, and you can learn new skills in a snap. So one class that I've just started taking is called Productivity for Creatives, and it's hosted by Thomas Frank. And honestly, what I love about it is that, yes, it's teaching me new skills and tools that I can apply to keep on task and not like daydream my day away, but it's also really digestible. So it's divided into chapters almost, so you can bite it off one section at a time. And It's teaching me how to become more efficient with template ideas for videos and delegating tasks. So I just find it's like very good, clear, concise info and makes me feel a lot more organized. Plus, it's not dry or boring to watch. Some other classes that I'm really interested in include portrait photography and as well as creating bomb 1-minute videos for Instagram. I feel like we can all use tips on that. And you can even take singing lessons or learn to decorate cookies. You know, my Gemini self, I'm getting really excited over here. So much to learn. So Skillshare really sets you up for success and personal growth. So you just enter a keyword about what you want to learn about and voila, so many options at your fingertips. It's also incredibly affordable, especially when you compare it to pricey in-person classes and workshops. An annual subscription is less than $10 a month. So we have a very special offer just for Breaking Beauty listeners. Explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/beauty and get a free trial of a premium membership. That's Skillshare.com/beauty. We'll link to that offer in our show notes and on our blog. And now back to the show.
Hey girl, hey, welcome to Taste of Taylor, my weekly podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Strecker. You might know me from Sirius XM Radio. I mean, I was there for like 12 years after all, but then Howard Stern allegedly got jealous of me, so I had to leave. I was actually able to pull myself up by the bootstraps and start my own podcast, Taste of Taylor, which is now officially with Dear Media. I'm so excited to say that. Ha! So I promise you in this podcast, you're going to either learn about something, you're going to be inspired by someone that's like always coming from a perspective of like humor, then this is the place for you. I hope you enjoy this little snack.
So can you tell us a bit about where you're from and some of your first like beauty memories?
So born and raised in Harlem, I'm actually still in Harlem. I took advantage of the pandemic situation and came back home. So yes, born and raised in Harlem, first generation Sunnyvale American. My mom has had a hair braiding salon on 125th Street, the legendary 125th, for about 32 years. So I spent a lot of time just around women getting their hair done at the salon. As you can imagine, everything goes down at the salon. Some things I probably didn't need to hear, but some things that I really enjoyed was just watching women come in. And if you're getting your hair braided or like a weave installed, it takes like anywhere from like 4 to 6 to 8 hours. So you're spending a lot of time very intimate with people doing your hair. So yeah, I left then. And then I like, you know, you leave this bubble of what beauty means for you, you know, very intimately. And then you go out into the real world. And that's when I, you know, went to Syracuse University, which was like a huge culture shock. I was like, again, like born and raised in Harlem, like, where am I?
Upstate New York from Harlem. That's quite a different world for sure.
It was so different, even though it's still New York. But being myself, I, you know, still found a way to work in beauty. So I worked at Sephora at the mall. Full-time going to school. And I just became that girl. Like whenever anyone needed to get their lashes put on or their wing line to just like snap, they would come to my dorm room and I was the girl. So
that's epic.
Yeah, I continued. I left and I did like a little stint in fashion working at Rebecca Minkoff and interning at Teen Vogue, Miss Beauty again. So I worked at Tem 2, which is an airbrush makeup company.
Right.
Where did you go from there? Did you went on to a bigger company, right?
I did. I graduated into the world of L'Oreal. You know how it is, especially if you're like a beauty marketer. You have to pass and do your dues. So it was like either Estee Lauder or L'Oreal. And for me, it was L'Oreal, L'Oreal Paris, to be specific. And I went there for about 2.5 years. And it was just all about, especially when I went in, it was all about influencer. Like, how do we create the story? This is when we're doing the crazy, like, helicopter trips and, like, Saint Tropez trips, trying to get that EMV going and, like, all those things.
So tell us more about the culture and, like, what year was this again?
Yes. Ooh, what year was this? That's a good question. I don't even remember. I tried to.
Yeah. Not that long ago, right?
It couldn't have been that long. Maybe like 5 or 6 years ago now.
Yeah.
So the culture, you know, just to give even more context, I think, especially being a first generation, I didn't end up being a doctor or like a brain surgeon. So L'Oreal was a pretty big deal for my family because they were like, okay, well, she has a real job. we heard of L'Oreal. So maybe something right. So for me, it was a huge deal because it was the affirmation. It was like, you know, I've been working so hard and, you know, a recruiter reached out to me, like, this is a huge deal. So for me, I went in there googly-eyed. I'm like, what do I do? how do I make this better? Like, just tell me what to do. I was so eager and so a little naive about it. So I went in there and it was just that. It was at the time we had like a kind of a war room that was like a social media room, and like all the, mm-hmm. the social media managers were put together in one room. So I was sitting there with Maybelline, with Etsy, L'Oreal Paris, Etsy, Maybelline and Garnier, and all the social media mm-hmm. together. We had this war room of metrics that were up like CNN, like a trading stock. It was bizarre to be like, this influencer post, we went up 20,000 impressions. I'm like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
So it was very interesting to see the data aspect or the data focus on just marketing and social and people, like marketing people and their stories. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, it became very clear, I kid you not, within like a couple of months that this was an institution that was very, I hate to say it, I'm gonna keep it real, but very monolithic in their view of beauty. This is pretty Fenty. So we would hear things like, you know, we don't really need 24 shades. We can just do 12. They don't buy. They, as in my people. Or, you know, we've had Maybelline and we've had, you know, Giorgio Armani shades for the longest, but they just don't purchase. They don't buy. And me as a consumer, and I know myself and I know my people, again, being in Harlem and especially of African descent, like, you know, some of these people, like they put on and they transform. It was hard to believe. And then I remember, I'm like, you never marketed to us. There was no billboard. Right. There was no 125th Street. You know, like, you know, when you look at like the Dapper Dan now with Gucci, like that flooded 125th Street and it became a huge moment because the marketing was correct. And then later when you fast forward a year at my tenure there, it was like, oh, wait, Rihanna's doing something over here and something's happening. There's traction happening. And then you go on, you know, Twitter and like all their deeper tones are sold out. And it became very clear that something wasn't happening. But as you can imagine, as a human being, as a Black woman working in that space, it was very tough. It was very silencing and ostracizing. I remember, you know, asking very publicly and very respectfully, like, hey, like, we need an employee resource group, you know, like it's okay to all, for all of us to have our differences in this space. But, you know, if all the women of color and men of color got together and able to support each other in this institution, I think it will benefit everyone. And the response was no, we're not doing that. It will further segregate people at the company. And like, it only can be like women of color, not just like specifically for like Black people, Black women. I'm like, just because we're pro us doesn't mean we're against everyone else. Like Facebook's doing it and like BuzzFeed is doing it and they're thriving and they're able to have, you know, these Friday informationals where you're sharing food and sharing music and understanding the culture. And as a marketer, I think that's just so important to really understand who you're talking to and how. And I've had that happen. I've had like someone actually called me the N-word at work and it was traumatic to me. And I can't leave that alone because it was my experience. And and that was early too. So I still stuck it out, still like, you know, well, let me be the champion of change in this space. You know, I've been, you know, granted this access to come to the ivory towers. And I'm like, you know what? I'm walking away. And I walked away with no job. I didn't even tell my parents, like, I cannot survive or thrive here. So I got to leave.
And it's just, I think there's probably so many people of color who have tried to be that champion of change from the inside. They're like, I'm here, I'm going to make it happen. But like, I'm sure at some point it's just so exhausting because you're maybe the only person in the room. It would be so probably tough to even like bring up the conversation. That's a huge starting point. And then you're just like shut down. Like I imagine that's very like demoralizing over time.
Yeah, it was. And you keep grabbing onto thin air, like thinking and hoping that, you know, if you, you know, find this person in like, you know, multicultural and then like something happens where you're just always in trouble. I always ended up in someone's office room, like, you need to buckle it down. I'm like, it was just an email. saying that if I'm asking my agency, you know, to pull together, you know, a league of influencers, and we are saying that our goal this year is to reach a billion, you know, new customers, then I expect that to be a multicultural subset of people. So if you're sending me 100 influencers and 97 of them are white women, I feel like we have a problem.
And I think it's interesting, you know, not to just pinpoint one company, because I think it's a lot of big companies and a lot of people will relate to your experience. But you know, having Monroe Bergdorf come in and step into that role to be like a diversity, inclusivity consultant and you know, sit on a board. I'm curious what your thoughts are. And if you think that there has been any progress in the last year, especially in beauty with Sharon Shooter, obviously, and her influence has been so huge with pulling up. I mean, not that you can speak for everyone, but from your own experience, I'm curious what you think.
Yeah. And good point about not speaking for everyone, because there are some like L'Oreal fanatics that are like, that's just your experience. I'm like, I do not want to speak on behalf of all women the same way I don't speak on behalf of all Black people. I'm just saying this is my experience. I actually was at L'Oreal when that situation happened with Monroe. And I just kept saying, like, again, it becomes like this idea where like suddenly you're insane. Suddenly you're ungrateful. Suddenly you should be just blessed to be in the building or in the environment. And she wasn't having it. And I was so happy about that. And I remember, I think even talking like to maybe even like, I think it was Phil at Teen Vogue about it. I'm just like, someone has to do it. And unfortunately it's this case of luck and cards that it happens to be you and like your heart can't take it and you have to speak up. But I felt that, you know, that dismissal or like we are no longer associated with you, like the silencing aspect, I fully related to. And like by the time they came back, maybe in the last, 2 years and maybe post Black Lives Matters, they came back and said, wait, let's actually look at the root of the situation and change it. And I've always been a champion of that. Even walking into those doors, I knew there was an issue. I'm a consumer. I go to Duane Reade and CVS and I'm looking for my shade all the time. And I remember, you know, being ready for makeup and trying to get the, you know, the Maybelline Mousse Foundation and not finding it. So now that I'm here, I'm so excited to change that and so excited to show you. Like, but all that to say, fast forwarding a little bit, I am appreciative of those you're willing to put action behind it. And we witnessed throughout the last 2 years, last year specifically, where like, you know, the black squares went up aplenty and then the follow through happens to, you know, fall through. And that's when it hurts, you know, the actual customer that you're trying to help. So I think at the end of the day, it's a power dynamic and helping that power dynamic shift and trying to see how we can empower, uplift, and amplify those voices that have been kind of silenced for a while and directly from people that it affects. So it's important to have Monroe in the room and hopefully incite more change internally versus just consultants, you know, having more people who are executive suite, who understand, people who have been through the ranks. So that assistant that has been at L'Oreal for 12 years, like, promote a senior vice president, for God's sake. Don't go all the way to Paris and try to get like another man to come in there. I'm like, this girl's been here for 15 years. Like, cut her some slack.
And so after you worked at L'Oreal, you mentioned that you quit. So tell us what happened next, because it was kind of unexpected.
It was unexpected. So one stint, I think I was like, you know what, I'm just going to freelance. I think I got this. So I freelanced for like 3 weeks, I think. And I got an email from Emily Weiss. And she's like, at first, you know, Glossy's really good with those like personalized emails. I'm like, look how cheeky these are. Oh my God. This feels really wonderful.
There's like cherries in the subject line.
Yeah.
A little winky face. I'm like, look how cute. What else are they launching? And I opened the email and it was Emily. And she's like, I have this crazy idea. Like, call me. I'm like, what? So I called her and I'm like, she's like, hey, like, what you doing? I'm like, you know, just left L'Oreal. No, she joked and said, you know, are you like in the L'Oreal closet, like hiding somewhere to take this call? Actually, I quit. I quit about 3 weeks ago and I'm like on the market, but I'm, you know, consulting, like, what's going on? And for me, I'm like, oh, social media. I've been doing so much social media now for about 12, you know, 8 years now. So like, you know, let's see what's going on. And she's like, well, like, how would you feel about doing product development? I'm like, what is that? Are we talking like tech product development, or what are you talking about? Cause I've never been a product developer. And she's like, listen, you know, we'll teach you all the nine of like the actual works of product development, but we need someone who like understands the consumer. And like, you've been like Glossier, like day one, I was like top shelfy, like back in the day. And I remember when they were even developing their skin tints, like the deeper shades way back when Glossier was just a concept. I remember working with them just as a customer and like Instagram fanatic. So fast forward, 3 years, here's this email. And she's like, I'm like, I don't know if I'm the person for this job because I've never done PD. And she's like, nope, we have the team here. We need to continuously think about like, you know, what will the comment be on this product? So like the texture, the story, all of that. So like, come on over and try it. I'm like, okay, I think it's just Emily talking. I'm not going to get through all these interviews. So
that's just fascinating to me, the way her mind works. Like, I'm just going to say it. Never heard a story like that in my life.
I've never like anything like that.
You're like, I literally don't think I'm the right person for this job. No, you are. You know social media. you're going to come on in and start making products.
And I was like, okay. Like, well, I was very vocal. I'm like, I've never done this before. I am not a chemist, but I tell you what, I do love products. I went there, and as you can imagine exactly what happened, I was not, I was like, what's going on? It felt like, I was like playing tennis with Serena Williams. If I could give you an analogy, everything was like, packaging goes here, this goes there. Da, da, da. It was like, what is going on? So I felt like the 1 year and a half that I was there felt like five. But I learned a lot. I will say that I learned a lot. And it just like even propelled me even harder to kind of even faster to do what I'm doing now. And it's just like, yeah, this is great, but there's still something missing here.
Yeah. You're like, I'm not home yet.
I'm not feeling it. And I'm glad that I was in the belly of the beast, but like, how do I apply this to something that really hits home to people that I brunch with, eat with, call pen pal with? Like, this is not connecting for me.
Hi, friends. Busting in for a moment to talk to you about some late breaking news courtesy of our friends at High Smile. So, newsflash, I used a teeth whitening kit that didn't make my teeth feel like they were scraping on glass afterwards. That's like front page material for someone like me who's suffered from sensitive teeth every single day of my adult life. I'm talking about the new PAP Plus teeth whitening formula from High Smile, the Australian teeth whitening brand you've probably seen all over Instagram. It looks like a flying saucer disc. You slide it in your mouth and it's got this bright blue LED light on it. And frankly, I was skeptical about trying it. I actually told the folks at High Smile that if I had any sensitivity afterwards, I wasn't going to be able to promote it on our show. Fast forward to testing it not once, but three times, and I can honestly say that it lived up to the promise for me. So you just put the formula onto the tray, leave it in for 10 minutes, and boom, you have noticeably brighter results after one use. There's actually a little card with like varying degrees of, I don't know, like yellow on it, so you can track your results. And I'll be honest, I drink a lot of tea. It's the British in me. So mine went from like an 8 to a 7, with 1 being the brightest already after just a few uses. And the kit comes with 6 individual treatments. So I'm excited to continue to build up those results. Now that I know it's not going to cause me any pain or sensitivity, I'm going to keep going. The formula is free of PEG, SLS, paraben, and peroxide as well. And because SmileCare is kind of like the new skincare, you can even get into a daily routine by using their new PAP Plus toothpaste and mouthwash that has the same formula in it for whiter teeth without pain or sensitivity. So if you'd like to get your hands on High Smile's new clinically proven peroxide-free range of SmileCare products, you can today via their website at www.highsmileteeth.com. That's www.highsmileteeth.com. I mean, so what was the moment? Were you on a beach or where were you when you were like, Ami Cole? Like, what happened?
Yeah, you know what? I feel like Ami Cole had always been in the back of my mind, that just constantly whispering, like, girl, you can do this. Girl, you can do this. I'm like, no, I'm not ready. I'm not ready. I gotta go to L'Oreal. I gotta do this. I gotta do that. I gotta know everything first. And to be really, really frank, I think the industry wasn't ready either. They weren't ready to have the conversation. I was just so close to those NPD reports and like looking at those massive reports, and I just could not even find myself on the reports. So I'm like, why is there no consumer testing for this cohort of women? And we know that, you know, she buys and she's loyal and she's always searching, and those average orders are higher because she's always exploring for that right fit. Couldn't find any data. I think it was up until like 2017 when NPD finally reported on the Black consumers in household and beauty, when we realized the purchasing power. But to fast forward a bit, I think after Glossier and after quite frankly being quite exhausted and like just trying to, you know, fit in or get in there and make a stream or like forge this relationship with the community that I come from, I'm like, why not do it? Like, let's see what happens when I try. And I even like Snapchat or Instagram this. I'm just like, hey guys, this is real crazy, but I feel like I'm going to do my own thing. And I feel like I'm going to document the entire thing on Instagram. And like, I don't care if I fail, but at least I'll try. So I promised myself every single day I'll do one thing. And it started with like, you know, coming to the realization and writing out a business plan, which I'm like, whatever.
And that sounds painful.
Business plan. And I came back, I think it was like July, and, you know, Cosmoprof was happening, I think, that weekend. And I just booked my ticket on a credit card. I'm like, I'm going to Cosmoprof, which is this huge convention where all the, you know, product developers and packaging, they all come to Vegas to, you know, of course, you know, show their things and also party. I'm like, I don't know if I'm getting there, but I'm going to Vegas. So I went out there. I booked my little appointments and I'm like, okay, well, I did that. Let's see what's next. And I'm like, okay, I did my follow-ups. Let's see what's next. And honestly, that is what happened for the past 2.5 years, building this slowly and slowly. And yeah, I don't know if there was an aha moment because it's just been so engraved in me and everything just kind of came, as a cliche as it sounds, but I'm grateful that I listened and I had the courage to be a bit crazy about it.
I'm curious though, you know, it could have been a very natural segue for you to get into hair,
yeah,
you know, growing up around a salon. And there's a lot of, it's starting to become more popular, like all the shades with foundation and that, where it's problem solution. So I'm curious what your specific goal was that you were like, this is what I want to do in this space. What's your unique take with this brand?
I love that question. And people always ask me about hair too. I'm like, ironically, I'm not that great at hair. I think one thing that I struggled with, and just to be quite frank, was just self-esteem. You know, for a very long time growing up in Harlem, very dark skin. This was pre, you know, being from Africa was cool, before, like, you know, Afro beats and the whole movement that has happened in the past, I guess you can say 5 to 6 years, didn't exist. So I was always like the kind of black sheep growing up, even in Harlem. You know, people would be like, why are you so dark? Like, I really just genuinely want to understand. And I'm like 6 years old. I'm like, I don't know. I just came to school. I don't know. And especially, you know, even with my aunties, and I love them to death, like, bleaching the skin is a huge thing and issue in our culture. So a lot of the beauty products, even today, if they do not brighten your skin or lighten your skin or clarify your skin, it's not a good thing. So the standard of beauty is kind of graduating, you know, even skipping makeup and going into skin bleaching. So much so that I've personally been offered skin bleaching cream, like, oh, wow, you're like 16 now. You should start bleaching your skin. And I was just like, well, why would I do that? And I, no one could explain to me why I would do that. It was never like, oh, you will look prettier to men. It was never like, oh, this is like, no, like, you just have to. And I was just like, okay, well, there's an issue here. I don't want to bleach my skin. And this is affecting you. Like, and you're not saying it out loud, but like, you feeling, you know, confident in your melanin and in your skin is not a thing. And even now, I don't even, to be quite frankly, I don't even know if this makeup style will resonate back home, because people want full coverage. They want transformation. So for me, it's kind of answering the little girl who, you know, wanted to play around with makeup, but not really transform. I wanted to see my skin. I wanted to be able to celebrate my dark skin and not really cover it up or try to be lighter. And that kind of effortless, like, on the go makeup style wasn't there and still really doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just talking to my girlfriends over brunch and like talking to my friends who I know love the same similar look. Like, you know, what are you doing? Like, I'm like, oh, you know, it's easy. I'll just take my foundation. I'll cut it with some oil. I'll do this. I'll just use concealer and do this and that. I'm like, why doesn't this exist where we can just have one skin tint that's specifically for us, that's not ashy, that you can like see the skin and cover up some, you know, demarcations or hyperpigmentation, but not the full story. So the first one was like makeup style and that kind of missing out there. And then two, I really want girls to feel confident. Like, there is something about, especially those last 2 years, wearing less makeup and feeling confident in that, just to be able to see you and see your skin. So two of those things put together, I think it was just selfishly trying to fill a void. Who knows what other categories we'll venture into, but I think it was really important for us to start there.
Yeah,
that's amazing. And so the star product of the line, in your opinion, I know you're launching with 3 products. If someone out there is listening, what would you say is like the hero?
The gateway.
Yeah.
Oh, the gateway. I am biased, of course, but I will say that this skin tint, I'm just saying, this skin tint.
It sounds pretty unique.
It's so glowy. And I was just even talking to some editors, like over at Delore and into the gloss. They're like, what, how is this possible? Where it's like, you know, skin tints are a bit tricky. It can be either really greasy on the skin. It can be like too glowy or too sheer, or, you know, just not right in terms of undertones specifically. So we did a lot of research just talking to our customers. We had about like 400 women just sit down and say, listen, girl, this is what I'm using. This is the exact shade in NARS, the exact shade in MAC, and the exact shade in Fenty that I'm using. make this for me. And we did just that. So we did like a huge heat map at our apartment. And like, we just kept running on all those classic shades that kept coming up. We took that data and then we went to our chemists and we hired a PD specialist that came from this world. Specialists that understand like this needs a hit more blue or a hit more yellow and knock down this and knock down that, the language that I didn't have to be able to kind of edify these shades. So I would say this is our baby. All of our products have baobab seed oil in them and it's made to love and nourish on the skin. So we're kind of merging this idea of skincare and makeup together. But again, not in the art of transformation. Even those that love a beat face, this mm-hmm. is your Sunday makeup or your, you know, date night makeup. We want to this is for you as well.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so is it one universal shade or are there multiple shades?
Yeah, sorry. So for the skin tint, there's 6 shades. So we range from the deep, dark story of like, you know, South Sudanese and Senegalese skin tones all the way to medium skin tones where if you'll see on Monday our campaign. Bashana, she's of Hispanic descent. One of my best friends, Filipino, very light and fair skin. And, you know, my Saudi friends, the medium shade works for them. So we've been able to stretch it out a little bit. And, you know, skin tints is usually like 6 shades anyway. So it's like 6 shades of brown that we really focus on those undertones.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I love that you're getting really real in describing the tones. And it's not like we've got chocolate, we've got latte, we've got caramel.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. What's the best like one-liner feedback you've gotten like from one of your girlfriends or your mom or your sister or something?
Oh my God, I recorded it. It's the best thing ever. I recorded it. My friend Abina, she came over to my house and I was like so nervous. You know, when you first give a sample out, you're like, oh my God, let's see where this goes, you know? So she tries it on. She's yelling, I kid you not, in my Brooklyn apartment in the mirror, like, it looks like my skin though. She's aww. Yelling again. She's like, no, but seriously, you know, when you get like the deep dark, it becomes muddy and it like masks your skin. So like if you are the ducky thought, or if you were like, you know, like Sukaina, who's like, I think she's like up here somewhere, like Sukaina's shade.
On your mood board.
Yes, I have a mood board behind me. Almost looks dirty. It's just a little muddy, but we really wanted to focus on that undertone and like, yes, you can have neutral, but like it doesn't have to be like straight black on the skin. So watching her, mm-hmm. I literally had to go back to her. I'm like, hey girl, we might need to use this on a paid ad. Is that okay? Like I need you to sign a waiver.
That's a true friend.
She was like
thanks
for
the feedback. Can you sign here though? But I wanted to ask you, like, how do you like to apply it? Do you use like a beauty blender and sponge it on, or like, how do you work it into your routine?
Yeah, so I am a fingers girl. Thanks to Sir John. Sir John's like, always use your fingers. It heats and melts. I'm like, okay, all right now. So I for a long time been using my fingers, but we're actually developing some tools just because not everyone wants that. So I've been using this mm-hmm. very like dense kabuki-esque thing, thingamajiggy mm-hmm. that I've been applying it on now. But it's very versatile and like it's one of the skin tints that can actually work with the beauty blender because, you know, sometimes with the beauty blender, it takes away and kind of sucks in the product. But it doesn't really do that with, well, the original beauty blender doesn't really do that on it. So I'm really excited about that. And I just dab it on. I always mm-hmm. start in the center of my face because my nose is a little bit lighter than the rest of my face. So I start there and kind of gleam it out and then just like kind of rub it down a little bit. But it feels like a moisturizer and it doesn't feel like heavy mm-hmm. on the skin. I can't wait for you guys to try it, but it's very lightweight. It's breathable. It's a summer friendly makeup as well, but also really, mm-hmm. really yummy during the winter too, when you need an extra cushion of moisture. Yeah.
So is Sir John's kit in the mail or what? Has he received it yet?
Every day. I'm like, I know you got this. I see the track in the open that kit. He's like, I got you, girl. You gotta be on for John.
Yeah, just take a little picture, just post it. It's no big deal. John's story is real. I know you hear me. Now a moment of pause for our friends at Barefoot Scientist. So I don't know about you guys. I've been in lockdown for the past, I don't know how long, and I haven't had a pedicure in over a year. It's killing me. So I want to tell you how I'm turning my feet around right now with Barefoot Scientist. It's scientifically advanced skincare for your feet. Every single product is specifically formulated for the unique needs of your feet using the very best ingredients from science and nature. Their formulations are rigorously researched, tested, and optimized. You know you're getting the best. So here are the three products I used. First, I started with Barefoot Scientist Pure Grit. It's made with Icelandic volcanic sand, quartz, bentonite clay, magnolia bark extract, and avocado oil. It's an amazing first step in the bath. It smelled like eucalyptus. It was very spa-like, refreshing, and got that first layer of skin off. Next, I used the Barefoot Scientist High Dive when I got out of the bath, so I dried off my feet. It's really beautiful formulation. It contains 15 of the world's most effective moisturizers, including 4 types of hyaluronic acid, shea butter, glycerin, ceramide NG, podiatrist-recommended urea, and other healing botanicals. My feet felt like they were wrapped in a moisture blanket afterward. Very different for a foot cream. Last, piece de resistance, the exfoliating booties. You only have to do this once a season and you're set. So this is like a peel, like a professional peel. It's going to get deeper down in 7 days. I'm literally wearing them right now. In 7 days, it's going to peel off like a little snake to reveal gorgeous, gorgeous skin underneath. And Barefoot Scientist Reboot is specifically formulated with milder exfoliants to be gentler on sensitive skin. So it's AHAs, but they're like gentler. Love it. Plus, because Barefoot Scientist cares so much about their formulations, all their products are hypoallergenic, dermatologist tested, cruelty-free, and free of phthalates and parabens. Right now, our listeners can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at barefootscientist.com using code BEAUTY. That's barefootscientist.com, code BEAUTY. Go get all of your foot care essentials right now at barefootscientist.com and enter promo code BEAUTY at checkout for 20% off your first order.
I'm really curious, and Carlene and I have talked about this sort of like behind the scenes on our podcast, like before, you know, during the whole pandemic, we were like, how the F are people creating brands in a pandemic? Like, I just picture you like, and I know you've kind of like talked about this too. You're like FedExing samples from like Italy, and you're dealing with your investors and your team. And like, you know, can you speak specifically about like what this year has been like to like launch something?
Yeah. I wish I could write a book. I need a book.
You should.
This is an audible book right here. Go for it.
I think in history here, it was insane. It was insane. And I tell you, this process has taught me so much about myself, because you're just like, there's no way. There's no way you could do this. There's no way you could do that. And I started fundraising in April of 2020. That means that March hit in New York.
Wow.
And it was devastating. And, you know, if you were in New York at that time, it was just like ghost town. Like, it was nothing to look forward to. It was just really sad. And, you know, just going back to just equity, like we know, you know, Corona hit home for me. Like my dad was sick for about 4 months and in and out of the hospital.
Wow,
and
wow.
It was literally calls with investors who told me like why you need to exist because Fenty exists. And then calls with like doctors saying like, oh, we're avoiding the ventilator today. Like he ate today, or he has like an IV in today. And I was just turning on and off. And I just remember thinking over and over again, I kid you not. I remember thinking like, when my dad leaves this hospital, because I know he will, he needs to see something. He needs to see that, you know, him coming to America in 85 was worth it. He's not leaving us just here out here. I'm jobless right now, but I need to prove that this number one needs to exist. So it was motivation for me. It was a lot. It was very taxing. But I had the support of my friends and my family and my mother at the time. And we closed our round in like July. So it was a very long process compared to like how many people raise. And not to mention that, on top of that, you have Black Lives Matter happen as well. And a lot of different conversations happening in beauty where, you know, we were just so exhausted. And I am a hopeless, romantic, optimistic, all those things. And I just knew that something had to give. And I knew that something good was going to come from this, and that we would get on the opposite side of that if I just keep trying. That is literally what happened. So closed it in July, and luckily I've been building this for quite some time. So by the time July and August hit, I already knew who I wanted to hire. I knew that I'd worked with them already. It was basically time to put POs with the contract manufacturer. So I was like ready to go. So I just turned on, and then I had to build a team from this laptop and this phone
and this mood board.
I know. Over the entire year. And like, we might've met maybe like, not even the whole team. We might've met maybe twice in person. And that was
wild
to test products out. So I wish I could tell you that there was a blueprint, but honey, it was all just spiritual alignment and like, this got to get done. So I guess I got to do it.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Mm-hmm. And I love what also what's really, I think, sets you apart, and especially as like a new beauty brand, is like you've put it all out there. You're like an oversharer. And I feel like that has really made people root for you. And like it's so different than what a lot of brands have done, even indie brands, like everything's so hush hush, trade secrets. And you're just like, no, I'm going to show everything. And it's like, do it differently. And I think it's really made people root for you.
Aw, thank you.
Is that a conscious decision to do that?
I get in trouble for it sometimes. My brand manager is like, you don't put the phone down. I'm like, okay, all right. It's a conscious decision because I just remember growing up in Harlem and not seeing an example at all. Like, I think the most exciting career day we had was like someone who came from like Uptown Magazine. She came and she's like, oh, I work at a magazine. I'm like, that is amazing. Like, what do you do? Like, how do I get there? Like, how do I quit college, right? I mean, high school right now and work for you. So for me, it was really about like sharing this story in the sake of just representation. Like, I am a regular schmegula girl and I'm figuring it out together. And I don't know, this might not work out, but I'll tell you that I do work hard. I do listen and I do love beauty. And I think that with that, you know, transparency, I can inspire people. I can invite people into the journey of like what it takes to actually make a brand, especially in the world of Instagram, where every 2 days there's a new brand out there and you have no idea what happened. You know, you got the J-Lo's of the world, the celebrities of the world. You got people that are influencers of the world that are new, this new wave of, you know, before we had the Paris Hilton, like fragrance and Britney Spears. And now we have like influencer and brand. That's a wave of collaboration. So to be a quote unquote normal girl and not have a huge following was very important for me to show like the brick by brick process.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I absolutely love that.
I'm curious where, like you said you tapped into 400 people giving you, you know, so it was in some ways crowdsourced, shades of Glossier a little bit there. Tell me, like, where did you find that community? Because that's a lot of people.
It is a lot of people. You know what? So my Instagram is about like, I think we are like 11K right now. So a lot of it was people that I've been like rallying along the way. Some people have been following me since attempt two. Only because I've always talked about beauty and I've always been just a product junkie. So on the weekends, going to Sephora, like, nope, don't buy this, not worth it. Don't do this, don't do that. So in a very small micro influencer way, I think that a lot of our consumers came in that way. And then whenever I went to like panels and things where they could not pay me, I'm like, okay, well, you can't pay me, but can I tap into the newsletter and talk to your people, and whoever wants to stay, stays with me. And really trying to understand like a barter system, like wherever I was and extending my like kind of reach in any way, I would be like, okay, but like, how do we get more people into the fold? So for a lot of times it was just that, and like continuously driving stories home, like, hey, I really need your feedback on this. Or like, I'll see someone that I like love to, you know, listen to or I trust their opinion. I'd be DMing them like, hey girl, can I just send you a sample? Or like, what shade are you? I can't figure it out. And then they would just say yes. And luckily we were able to have that group, and like continues to grow. And we're trying to hold on to it as we scale, because that's a very hard part as well. So we're looking at different pockets of the internet to really be able to kind of just manage it and like grow it a bit. So we're looking at platforms like Geneva. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they're like a hyper engaged social media platform, where it's just like your diehards, they live there. They're giving you feedback. It's like multi, I guess you could say, platform. So it's like audio, you can do a Zoom call, you can do Slack. It's very Slack-esque a platform. And we've been tapping in there too, like, hey guys, like, this is launching, like, is the website working? Can you like look at this and do like a test checkout? And they help us.
That's good. Awesome. Fantastic. My wheels are turning in my mind. I know that. That's that's amazing. God, you social media kids, you rule the world.
Millennials.
Now, you talked about funding and gaining funding during the pandemic, which couldn't have been easy. And I also understand that you're one of only 40 Black women ever who have been able to raise $1 million in seed capital funding. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on that and why you think that's still the case.
I think it's crazy. Okay, so if you don't know better, $1 million, number one, sounds like a lot. It sounds like it's enough to like, you know, live for a million days, like just in luxury. But it really is, you know, enough energy to kickstart an idea. So I know a lot of people are like, well, you got the money. I'm like, girl, do you know how much inventory costs? But just to backtrack a little bit, I mean, it's funny because even like pre-Black Lives Matter, there had been investors that I talked to. Some of them even forgot that I talked to them. And I told them that I didn't change anything about this deck. I didn't change anything. And at the time, they were like, no, this feels like hourglass. Or, you know what? Like, how about you just go to Emily Weiss or you go to Sheena and you ask them to create a Black version of their company? I'm like, why?
Oh, my God.
An investor.
What?
Wow. It's an email. I'm like, you meant, like, it was on purpose. You typed it and you sent it.
DMs to Estee Lauderdale. Joking.
Getting this feedback. I'm like, well, okay, but what if Rihanna does blah, blah, blah? I'm like, I am not worried about Rihanna. I know who I'm talking about. Here they are. Like, just believe in me. And it's just so frustrating because I knew people that were raising around the same time I was. I turned around and then, like, 2 days later, they're like, yeah, we're, like, oversubscribed. I'm like, I'm not being a hater. But, like, what did you do differently that I can apply to my process? And I realized very quickly that, you know, it is a game. And it's if you think of sororities, it's fraternity in another instance when it comes to capital funding. And if we go back to the source of funding in general, like, it's starting in Silicon Valley and very tech heavy and very Facebook and all of that stuff. So these people are kind of like very groupthink. So when you come in and you have an afro or a wig or anything like that, they're like, whoa, this doesn't feel familiar. This is high risk, you know, all these things that are kind of pushed on you. Or, you know, like, oh, you're doing this by yourself. Are you sure you can do that? Don't you need, like, a co-founder? Like, I suggest you go, like, find, like, a finance guy or kind of do that. I'm like, huh, I don't know if you're giving the same energy to the people that you just gave money to, or, you know, the other non-Black people. So it was very frustrating, and a lot of calls with other fellow founders that were looking for funding. And we had to, like, keep knocking at the door. And this is what I meant earlier with, like, you know, things kind of breaking through. I think last year took a lot of people to sit down and reevaluate their portfolio, reevaluate mm-hmm. how they're merchandising, the 15% pledge, all of these things. And they were, like, willing to take the phone call now. So what would have been mm-hmm. a month for someone else or someone in my cohort took a year. And it's just so unfortunate because I feel like, I mean, if you're talking about investment in money, I'm like, what a quicker way to get money. Like, these are the girls that know, you know, these are the girls that buy and they're, like, devoted and they want to try things all the time. And, like, the wigs, the music, the accessories and beauty and fashion, that is the culture. So it was very disheartening, and I just had to keep going at it. But yeah, I talked to about, like, 150 investors, and I think 10 of them said yes.
Okay. Final question for you. So these are really early days. In fact, you will just be launching by the time this episode comes out. But what do you think is next for your brand? Like, where do you hope to be a year from now? Or you know, what's like the ultimate dream with Ami Cole?
Yes. I always get nervous about that. I'm like, am I jinxing myself? I'm like, no, I spoke this brand. And we're going to keep doing that. I really... Manifesting is the word. That is it. I really want this to become like a beauty destination. I don't know what that means, if it's digital or like in person, but I want it to be like, you know, you just walk in there or you, like, you know, click in there and you just, like, you can exhale. I think we start with beauty products, but I really want to see, like, how we can really fortify and, like, tell these stories. We were really, really cognizant about, like, who we use for creative and, like, tapping local artists, whether you live, you know, Akeem Snow, who's an amazing photographer emerging in Harlem. We went all the way to Senegal for the brand campaign shoot, working with Jabril and Mad Pixel, working with, you know, Senegalese creatives that understand our stories and understand our style of light skin, edit skin, all of that. So if we can make that 360 and encompassing, I think that would be a beautiful thing. The first stride is actually in July when we have a moment that's like not beauty products, just to test out very early on, but just to see like how it kind of manifests. So we're really excited about that. But I think about beauty 360. I think about like how I feel when I wake up. I feel like you know, we require a lot of energy to be able to show up in the world. So like, how do I, you know, ease the burden, or how do I have those, you know, bath moments for us? Because we need it.
Thanks for listening. You can find details on every product mentioned in today's episode, along with our exclusive promo codes, on our blog at breakingbeautypodcast.com.
While you're there, be sure to sign up for our newsletter. Every episode will be delivered directly to your inbox, so you won't miss a single thing.
And get social with us. Let us know what you think of the episode. You can follow us on Instagram at breakingbeautypodcast.
And did you know we also have a private Facebook group? Just search Breaking Beauty Podcast chat room.
You can even leave us a voicemail at any time with questions or feedback at 1-844-227-0302.
And don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast fix. Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts, where you can show us some love by writing a review.
See you next Wednesday.